Blog Talk Radio.
Satellite Guys Radio presents another edition of Satellite Nation with your hosts, Michael and Dave. We look forward to taking your calls. Do you have a comment for the show? Or maybe you have a question for us? If so, we look forward to your call at 877-SAT-GUYS. That is 877-728-4897. Now here are your hosts, Michael and Dave.
Hello, everybody, and thanks for tuning in. Welcome again to Satellite Nation for Wednesday, June the 19th. I'm your host, Michael, KE4EST. Sitting here with that, well, I'm not sitting here with him, but here's my co-host, Dave, Wally HTS. And I'm coming to you live from North Carolina, Western North Carolina, as I do every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We've got a pretty good show lined up for you tonight. We're going to have Trip NVA, as he goes by on Satellite Guys, back with us to talk about over the air and rabbit ears and all the developments with that and what's going on with that. And last time he was on, it was a really, really good show. So we're really looking forward to picking his brain there and having a good time. So everybody call in and chat with us. We're looking forward to it. So hello, Dave. What is going on up there in Kentucky this evening? Has weather been treating you good?
The weather is good, but it's hot and humid out here.
Same way.
Yeah. So we do have a special guest on the show tonight, which is awesome. Appreciate his time, and know he's a busy guy, and want to thank him
for
coming
on. Very busy guy. Hard to get a hold of. Anything, before we get into our guest, anything exciting happening in the satellite world or anything?
Yes.
Or anything?
Yes, it has. So last night, I think around, I don't know, 7-ish something, I got an email from the Wall Street Journal that said that Dish had rescinded its offer for Sprint. So
yep.
I thought that was quite interesting. That was just a ploy, I guess, for his Clearwire acquisition, if he can pull that off. It's be interesting to see what happens, but I've got a bad feeling now that Spectrum is just going to get held hostage and be used for nothing since two people are fighting about it, but I don't know. We'll see.
It'll probably get used for something, but we'll see what happens.
Yep.
I'm not quite sure. But anyway,
say, I got one other thing that I found that was quite interesting. So I was lining up the satellite for 107, which I think is ANIK1. Well, apparently EchoStar has launched a satellite that's at 107.1, and this particular one for Shaw is at 107.3. And I was picking up transponders off the new Dish Network bird at 107.1. And I'm just wondering what's going on there.
I don't know. Ain't that the one they're using for the internet and stuff like that? A new bird for Usenet and DishNet?
I don't know. I mean, it had, I was using TS Reader and looking at the PIDs, and I mean, it was actual channel. So, I mean, I guess, I mean, I don't think it could have been, you know, side lobes or whatever from 110, 3 degrees off, but I guess it's possible. But I don't think it was. It's because it's so powerful. You know, I was using just a regular LMBF, you know, linear, and, you know, it's circular transponders, and, you know, it's so strong it was coming through.
Now, that's possible. I've had that happen a couple times on 10-foot dish.
Yeah, and so I'm thinking if that's the case, there's no way it was 110. It had to be. So there's something going on with that 107 bird. If anybody's out there exploring, that might be something to check out.
Swing my dick over there and better so and check that out myself.
Mm-hmm.
I thought a lot of that stuff was KU, but I'm sure they've got stuff on everything, you know, when they sit.
Oh, it was KU that I was playing around on.
I meant KA, but why send a bird up, you know, with just KA, you know, transponders when might as well let me go ahead and put C-band and whole 9 yards on it and for whatever use. So, yeah, there might be something going on.
Yeah, and then the one thing, I just got it today, unfortunately, because I was hoping to get it going before the show, but I got the LMBF from Mike Cole that KUSAT brought in, and that's to get the new G1 on the Shaw receivers. So I didn't get a chance to hook that up yet, but see what we're getting, and hopefully I can hit that without a problem here in Kentucky. But
Roger, roger. I didn't have much more. You had to. I was looking at the outline here, and yeah, you. I didn't see them outlines. So I'm glad you said that. So, because I almost jumped in front of you there. You got anything else that I'm unaware of? That's pressing.
I got tons of stuff. I didn't get an outline.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just rumbling out of my head. Go ahead.
Oh, it's just the only thing I can think of, you know, because we do everything kind of. It's not really, you know, related to TV, but you hook it to your TV. But I wasn't really surprised to see it, but the new Xbox coming out, they went with, you know, first it's going to have all these restrictions and all this mess, and PS4 came out, and it's going to, oh, it's no problem, you know, with GameStop friendly and everything, used games and blah, blah, blah. Now they've decided to change their mind on it, and okay, we're going to be like that. And I knew they would. I don't know if they just bullying or what they was doing. But.
Now I don't understand what the background there. Tell me, so they were going to develop a system where you couldn't buy or use games, or what's the deal?
Well, yeah, I mean, once you buy the game, you have to, you know, and you get, your box has to hit the internet, and it's got to be, every time you play the game, it's got to log in to the internet as you, and you know, you want to take a game to your buddy's house and play it on their Xbox. Their Xbox is not, you know, registered to that game. It's purchased the game, you know. There's a whole bunch of
them. Oh,
and nobody's. Yeah, and there was no official exactly what was going to happen yet, but that was kind of some of the stuff going on, you know, with it. And, you know, more of this stuff. Some talks is about, you know, playing everything off the cloud. You go and you pay $60 and you get a number, a little card number. You don't actually get disc. And you go in and you punch that code in, download, start playing from the cloud. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of mess about it. But we don't need getting all that here because I don't know enough about. I just know bits and pieces of it anyway. But I figured they'd change their mind on it. So anyway, I guess we will introduce our guest tonight. Tripp, are you there?
I am here. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening to you.
Evening.
Appreciate your time.
How are you this evening?
Good. You're a busy, busy man.
Yep. Lots going on and not a lot of time to do it, but I think that's everybody.
Yeah.
Especially in the summer.
Yeah.
Yes.
So is there anything off the top of your head, Tripp, that you can think of that's and the rabbit ears are over there stuff or anything that's just, you know, with the laws or anything with your website or anything that's changed just recently or something that's just, you know, would wow, you know, or, you know, very, that's of interest, you know, or bam, that at you?
Well, during my last appearance on the show, right at the end, I mentioned the new auto scanner that I put up, and, you know, there was some interest, but I think I was a little bit unclear. You know, the software needs configuration on our end, which is why we haven't posted it publicly. So anyone who might be interested in participating should send me an email or send me a private message on the forum because, you know, what I have to do is I have to go on the server back end and I have to put in the information about your specific HD home run receiver. Otherwise, it just rejects your request to submit data.
Okay.
And I did that, and I haven't sent you the info, and I think I got to send you the MAC address and something else. And
What you have to send, there's an 8-digit ID number that's associated with the tuner, and that is what I need, and I need a few other things, like your coordinates, so it plots you in the right spot on the map and measures your distances correctly and everything.
Gotcha.
And for anyone who might be tuning in who's not familiar with what I'm talking about on gravityears.info, under the maps dropdown, there's a feature called Live Band Scan. And basically what it is you have an HD home run network attached tuner, that's hooked to an antenna, and all it does is continuously scan 24 hours a day. And it has two, you know, it has two benefits. One, you can see what the signal strengths of your local TV stations are over time, you know, to sort of see how weather or various conditions impact it. And the other thing it does, if you're a DXer like I am, it lets you see, it basically lets you DX 24 hours a day instead of just when you happen to be in front of the TV set.
Got you. Well, that's cool. Hey, Trip,
and,
you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh,
and,
I think you were breaking up a little bit there. Sorry about that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you catch my message or my...
Yeah.
Okay.
We just got some robotic noise going on.
Okay. Yeah, and...
Gives us funny noises.
Yeah, one other comment. I don't know how many people visit Rabbit Ears religiously, but today... the website was down for about 5 minutes. I've been having some ongoing reliability issues. The server seems to get to a certain point, and then the whole thing panics and shuts itself off.
Yeah, I seen where you sent a message about 11:30 or something this morning. It was going down.
Yeah. And you know, my website is still hosted out of Lucan Communications, and in my former employer. And they took it down shortly after 11:30, and they checked, and the hard drive controller says everything's fine. So I'm guessing it's not the hard drive, but still means I don't know what the issue is. So if you happen upon the website and it's down, try again in about 15 minutes. It'll probably be back.
Is it running Linux?
Yeah, it's a Linux machine, which is why my first jump to conclusion is the hardware, because it's, you know, up until about 3 weeks ago, it was really, really reliable. I mean, the only times it had gone down were when I had taken it down since January, when I switched off of a dying hard drive. And so I don't know why it all of a sudden decided to start shutting down. I mean, 3 weeks ago, it did it 4 times in a 5-day period. And this week I think it's done it twice. So I'm sort of at a loss. The really bad thing is if it happens right after I go to bed, I don't know about it until I wake up. That happened to me a few weeks ago. I was down for nearly 10 hours. But thanks again to the folks at Lucan Communications. The Network Operations Center is actually checking my website now on an hourly basis, so it should not be down for more than an hour.
Well, that's awesome that they're checking it at the NOC. So when it goes down, I guess you got to go and reboot it.
Yeah. I call up the NOC in Tennessee, and somebody walks into the server room and pushes the reset button, basically.
Mm.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Have you looked at the log file to see what the kernel panic is?
Well, that's why I suspected it was the hard drive, because the log files weren't saying anything. The one time I happened to be logged in, when it happened, it was acting like the hard drive was forcibly dismounted, because it was saying that none of the commands were available.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Everything about it screams dying hard drive, but the controller says everything is fine. So, you know, and it's a RAID array, so there's two disks. You know, if one of them is failing, the other one should be taking over.
Right.
But it's not, so I'm wondering if it could be a flaky controller or something else. I don't know if anybody out there in Radio Land has any ideas for me, but I'd be glad to hear them.
So I guess you're running a hardware-based RAID and not software-based RAID?
It's the onboard RAID controller. In hindsight, if I was configuring this today, I would have done it in software with the preferred Linux mirroring method, but at the time I had never done a Linux RAID array before, so I went with what I was used to, which was doing it in the hardware.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Linux is like that. It's all intimidating at first, and then you start using it, and it's really not all that bad, you know? I love it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been using it since high school, and I'm 24 now, so, you know, for me, my laptop runs it. And actually, there are things on Rabbit Ears that literally I cannot do with a Windows machine. I cannot generate the 16,000 coverage maps that I have without my Linux computer.
Nice.
Now, what are you running on your computer? Is it just straight Linux, you know, or are you using some kind of like Ubuntu or something with the fancy GUI on it?
Yeah, no, it's called Aptosid. It's basically Debian.
Yeah.
And you know, it does have a user interface. I do everything on it basically. Next to me, though, I do have a desktop computer that has Windows on it for things like TS Reader. You know, because TS Reader is very important to me.
Oh yeah.
But you know, that's basically all I use it for. I can do almost anything else on my laptop with Linux, and I even have TS Reader running in Linux on that, but it only works with the HD Home Run. It doesn't work with USB tuners or PCI tuners.
Is that for lack of driver support in Linux?
No, I mean, the tuners themselves actually work. It's that TS Reader is a Windows program, so it runs in an emulation layer, and the emulation layer doesn't know how to talk to the USB or the PCI.
Oh, okay. Because with the Home Run, you're just doing UDP.
Right, yeah, because it's over the network, it can do it just fine. But the hardware, if it's directly connected, it doesn't know how to talk to it.
So is there a command string you can put in VLC to change the channel on a Home Run without having to use that software that you know of?
If there is, I'm not aware of it.
Okay.
Yeah,
that'd be cool, though.
Now, I mean, the one thing that you can do, and I've seen this done before, is if you pipe the entire transport stream into VLC, you can change the channel on a particular stream. So, you know, if we were, say, we were piping in the Galaxy 19 transponder with Al Jazeera on it, in theory, you could switch in VLC to RT because the whole feed is going to VLC. But I wouldn't know how to actually physically change where it's tuned to, you know, frequency-wise.
Gotcha. And so, I guess in VLC, it'd be a different video track for the different PIDs, maybe, or?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's cool. I'll have to try that out.
Yeah, somebody that I spoke with at a television station last summer actually sent me a script. I never had a chance to work with it, but he sent me a script that was supposed to make it possible to actually monitor all the feeds on a given channel or transponder at the same time with VLC.
Really?
But I never got a chance to play with it.
Huh. Well, that's really cool. And that's from the Home Run?
That's from anything that VLC can pipe, that you can pipe video into VLC with.
Oh, so that is almost everything under the sun. It's a pretty versatile program.
Yeah, basically.
Well, that's nice. So, what? Just out of curiosity, what version of TS Reader do you have?
What version of what?
TS Reader. Do you have just the regular $99 one, or do you have the more?
Yeah,
I have
the $99 one. I mean, it does basically everything that I need. The Pro version is more for television stations who need to monitor closed captions and they need to archive their video and things like that. A little bit overkill for the kinds of things that I do, which is basically monitor bit rates and look at the transport stream configuration and things like that.
Got now, that brings up a question. So do TV stations have to legally archive what they sent out over the air for like a certain amount of time or anything?
You know, I don't know that they have to, but it's really good to do, you know, if you have to prove something later. You know, if someone files a complaint and says, you know, the anchor on the air said this, you know, and you can go to your video and show that they didn't, that's pretty strong, you know, way of getting out of that bind. But I don't think there's actually a requirement to do it. I could be wrong on that. I'm not a broadcast attorney or anything.
No, I was just curious. So in this TS, in the Pro version, though, you can actually, do they record in like 1 hour segments, I wonder, and then it just goes into, a sand or something? For storage?
You know, I honestly don't know. I've never looked very closely at it. I looked at it enough to know that it was more power than I needed.
Gotcha.
You know, and when I do want to record things, you know, if I want to record a piece of a transport stream for some reason, I can do that with TS Reader. And in fact, you know, that's a feature of the standard version. The free version doesn't have it. I do actually have a utility that will let you record transport streams that doesn't cost anything. And that's helpful because I have a program that'll let me parse out the mobile DTV that you might have heard about. But it requires a full transport stream, and I'm not able to distribute it. So the only way for me to get that information is to have people send me full, you know, I ask for like 20 seconds of a full transport stream, and mm-hmm. it's about 50 megs in size. And then I feed it through the code, and out the other side comes something that looks a lot like TS Reader output, but is not TS Reader.
Gotcha. So what do you think about this? I think we were talking about this last week. We were talking about 4K, and some people say we should just skip 4K and go straight to 8K. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I mean, from my point of view, I'm not sure that the consumer demand is there to make any of them work. And that's my opinion, of course. You know, people liked HD because they were getting bigger TVs and the 480 wouldn't cut it. But the TVs are, you know, they've sort of hit the ceiling. You're not going to get the TV much bigger than it is right now. And people already see all the detail their eye is capable of making out unless they've got their eyes pressed against the glass. you know, I'm not sure, you know, 3D was a, you know, was an attempt to sell TVs. I don't see 4K as being any different. I don't see broadcasters wanting to step up to deliver that content. I don't see content companies stepping up to provide 4K. And at this point, you know, at this point right now, the equipment isn't there to do live 4K video. The last statistic I heard is that 4K encodes at approximately 4 times real time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if we're coding a half hour of video, it's going to take you 2 hours to do it. And who knows what kind of decoding power you need for that. So,
oh, geez, yeah.
I mean, I feel like it's too early in the game to be thinking about, you know, when will 4K supplant, you know, what we have now. But I'm sort of skeptical that the whole thing will take off. I don't see the home consumer, you know, chomping at the bit for it unless they start getting 200-inch TVs in their house.
Yep. Yeah, well, you saw last week that ESPN canned, you know, the 3D channel.
Yeah, and I honestly should not comment on 3D at all. The last time I looked at it in the Best Buy store, I got a headache in the 60 seconds that I watched it. So, you know, it does not appeal to me in the least.
Yeah, me either. I'm with you there.
You know, it's 4K and stuff. You know, I think, you know, I mean, it might not be 3 years like they're saying, 2016 or something, but by 2017, 2018, if they push it just right, it's all marketing. If you can
yeah.
make people believe it, that they need it and they want it and stuff, they'll get it. If they do the market, if somebody comes with a good marketing scheme, yeah, everything will go that way. The broadcasters will even be sold on it. But, I mean, that's just my opinion on it.
Yeah, I mean, my view sort of goes back to the Betamax versus VHS argument, which is that, you know, Betamax was the technically superior format. I mean, it had a better picture, et cetera, but it was only an hour long. And
yeah.
for people who wanted to record movies, VHS was good enough. And, you know, that's the problem. You know, it's sort of like the old expression, don't let perfection keep you from good. And I feel like the consumer is not going to look at 4K as the big upgrade that HD was to SD.
Right.
And without that driver, you know, DVDs brought, you know, basically perfect video, and then HD improved the perfect video for the big screen. What does 4K really bring the average person? You know, I would look at it, or, you know, my father, who's also very into home theaters, we would look at it and say, wow, you know, the picture looks really good. But, you know, you look at the typical person, I'm not sure that they're really that interested in the perfect picture.
Yeah. You're about right. And we got people like us that, you know, the enthusiasts and, you know, want to keep up with it and watch this stuff. But the typical person, like my wife, she'll still, you know, watch the stuff in SD,
mm-hmm.
in HD. And I'll say, you can't see that difference? And she says, I don't see that. I don't know what you're talking about. It looks fine to me. And I'm like, wait, let's pause right here. Let me look at this guy's face here.
Yeah.
I'm trying to switch stuff back and forth. And she goes, I don't know. It looks the same to me. As long as I get to watch my shows, I don't care.
Well, I even remember I visited my grandmother who lives in New Jersey and has cable vision. And I was looking at the digital cable, and it, you know, the SD channels were very badly pixelated. And I'm sort of sitting there, you know, having a hard time sitting there watching this, and I you know, I said something bad, and nobody else in the room saw it. It was just me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what they're used to seeing, and they don't think nothing about it, you know.
Yeah, and especially with internet video, people are actually getting very used to pixelation and compression artifacts in their video.
Yep. Exactly, exactly right. You people sit and watch YouTube all day, whatever and stuff, and you can get used to that. And then, so when you watch it on TV, you don't think anything about it. You know, the typical person, you know, in my opinion, and they don't think. I agree with you. I wish it wasn't that way. I want people to say, hey, you know, like my wife, I try to get her to see it. Finally, their day was watching something, and I'll flip back and forth between the SD version on the Dish Network and the HD version. And she goes, okay, I see it now. Because I got to get up and come in close to the TV. I said, you don't have to get close to the TV to see this, but I need you to come over here if you see it. And I start walking away from the TV, start backing up. She goes, oh, you can see it. Oh, I can see this now. And I didn't know. Now she's like, I don't know. Maybe you're right about this HD. I said, yeah, I'm right. You know. The typical person, they don't, you know, they don't care as long as they get to watch the show and see who killed so-and-so or who's in love with so-and-so or whatever show they're watching, what happens next, they don't care, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not to change gears too fast, but I have another piece of news that's, I guess you might say, it's tangentially related to the Dish Network thing.
What's that?
Some people in the audience may know that during the last Spectrum auction, for the 700 megahertz band, Dish Network, or EchoStar, I guess, bought up what was, in most of the country, what used to be Channel 56. And for a while, they tested basically ATSC, which is our digital TV standard, on Channel 56 in the Atlanta area. A few months ago, they filed with the FCC to light it up in about 10 more cities, and at least some of those are now on the air. The cities, there's a couple of cities scattered around. Durham, North Carolina, Ann Arbor, Michigan, Dickerson, Maryland, Jacksonville, Florida, Mount Pleasant, Pennsylvania, Janesville, Wisconsin, Kannapolis, North Carolina, West Bend, Wisconsin, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and Cleveland, Ohio. And in those markets, if you're close enough to their tower, you'll see, with your regular tuner, if it's on the air, you'll see either a Dish Network promo loop or you'll see a static slide that has Dish on it.
Really?
What they're doing, they're testing a mobile DTV service of some kind, because a friend of mine was able to get the Durham feed, sent me a transport stream. I fed it through my mobile DTV software, and sure enough, out the other side came 8 channels on mobile DTV. So
very interesting.
They had an info, you know, I guess it must have been a Barker channel. The software I have doesn't decode video. It just gives me, like, you know, the kind of data you'd see in TS Reader. But the first channel was basically a Barker channel, and then the rest of them were labeled HGTV, Discovery, Comedy, Cartoon Network, Food Channel, TNT, and CNN. So I don't know if that's something that they're looking to launch in the future. Some friends of mine are speculating that EchoStar has a build-out deadline with the FCC, and that this was their way of showing that they were moving in that direction.
God, I wonder how you would do that. What would you think they would use to secure that? I guess some software with a Go ahead.
Yeah.
Sorry.
The mobile DTV service actually has encryption built in, you know, so you can do that. And my friend's software that he wrote to do it will actually show you which ones are encrypted and which ones aren't. Of course, there's always the question of, was there any video at all? It's entirely possible that they were put up with the labels and they didn't have the video running yet. But I wouldn't be able to tell that. So, you know, the encryption is there. They use it. Actually, the regular broadcasters, NBC and Fox, are using it. They've encrypted their feeds to encourage people to register so that they can do tracking for ad sales.
Hmm.
So if you ever hear about Dial Mobile TV, spelled D-Y-L-E, that is an encrypted service. The video feeds are technically free, but you have to register with your, you know, your name and your other information before they'll let you have access to it.
Oh, and they've got that in quite a few markets.
Yeah, it's running in more than 100. It's running on more than 100 stations now. I've been having a hard time keeping up with where it launches, but it's been rolling out, you know, slowly over time. NBC, Fox, and ION are sort of the big backers of it. Some of the other stations have been playing with it too, but I know CBS is testing it in one or two places, and I don't know what ABC is doing. But, you know, we'll see if mobile DTV goes anywhere. I'm somewhat skeptical of it. But, you know, if it helps the broadcast business, you know, the broadcast business needs to stay relevant, and that's one way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So you think that Dish is doing that just to show progress, or you think they're actually going to try to sell a mobile video service?
Yeah, I honestly don't know. I'm of the opinion that they haven't decided what they're going to do with it yet. And
that's
what
I think,
you know, this is, they want to buy Clearwire. You know, they backed out of the Sprint deal, but they're still trying to buy Clearwire. They obviously want to build some kind of mobile network that's ground-based, you know, so they can provide internet services. And I'd be hard-pressed to imagine that they wouldn't want to use the Channel 56 space for that in the long term. But it's possible that they may want to do something like this short term because the equipment's already there. It's already been proven. All the TV tuners already tuned to it. You know, it seems like maybe it's a short-term thing. You know, or it's entirely possible that it's just to say, look, FCC, we're building something.
Yeah, leave us alone. Hey, Dan, are you there? You got any questions for Trip, Dan?
Yes. Was the channel with the, you were talking about Channel 56.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Can you guys hear me?
Okay. Would then 56 would then go on DXing when, because I can pick up Cleveland, some stations from Cleveland, within station count or on a normal HD TV?
You wouldn't be able to see the mobile DTV feeds, but like I said, there's the two or three people that I've heard from are seeing basically a static slide that just has the Dish Network logo on it on 56.1.
Okay, because there was a while back, there was some note, I've seen something go on over on 56 or 57 frequency on my flat screen, and I was like, this is out of their range. I was trying to figure out what was going on, but I was getting a signal off of one of those.
Yeah, most likely. They ran it in Atlanta for a long time, and, you know, I actually had people who sent me that, so I was able to confirm it at that point. And then it sort of slipped under my radar until a friend of mine, my friend in Durham, Wake Forest, wrote me back, wrote to me and said, I'm seeing this Dish Network slide on Channel 56. And I said, okay, that's strange. And I checked the FCC records, and sure enough, they had filed to turn on 10 of them.
Okay. What was I wonder if they're going to use this as a way to go around the local broadcasters. They, you know, they go straight to the, you know, CBS, like you were saying, they would go through NBC, ABC, Fox, go through with their programming and show that on their setup and go around the local the local TV stations where they're losing money on the, where they had to pay so much money to those local broadcasters. So I wonder if they're going around them. Could that be an issue.
Yeah, I mean, is it possible? Yes. On the other hand, you know, at this point, the networks don't pay the stations anymore. The stations get retrans dollars from the cable and satellite companies, and they pay half of that to the networks. So that's already sort of turned itself around. And if anything, I feel like the networks would be undercutting themselves by cutting their affiliates out of the picture if they're basically paying half of whatever they get from the cable companies.
I was just thinking, it was like, so they don't have to pay so much for, they could retransmit it themselves and not have to go through a local, go through Dish Network and say, we can broadcast on all of them for you, and then we don't have to deal with local broadcasters, and we can cut them out of the picture.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely a possibility. I feel like the local broadcaster is really one of the benefits that broadcast has over a cable and satellite service. I mean, having that local connection, you know, whether it's local news, you know, the local weather, whatever, you know, as annoyed as some people get about weather warnings and things, when push comes to shove and it's them under the gun, you know, they appreciate it, they know it, and that's where they go. I'm not sure that the networks are that anxious to sever ties. You know, I know we hear sort of the drumbeat from, you know, the Fox executive who said we might take our programming straight to cable. At the end of the day, I don't know that I see them wanting to do that because the local broadcaster, A, has a great cable position. In New York, it's on Channel 5. If you launch a new network in New York today, it's probably going to be up in the hundreds somewhere. Or the thousands. And, you know, the local news aspect of it really brings people in.
You got a point there. I was just thinking because the Hollywood, the TV studios were it's costing so much money to make movies and TV shows out there, and you know, they're not seeing the ad revenue come in as like they used to, and they had to pay so much money to the TV stations, and they figure, how can we get around this? And I thought this would be when you said that they could use that Barker channel, you were mentioning about the Barker channel, I thought that was the first thing that came to mind, is like they're trying to get rid of it, trying to go around it a little bit, and they're trying to lighten the load on paying so much out to the, or you understand what I'm getting at.
Yeah, no, it definitely makes sense, and it's something that could be done. And, in fact, if EchoStar really wanted to, they could theoretically turn that Channel 56 into some kind of nationwide, you know, broadcast channel if they really wanted to. If they thought they could make money on it, I could absolutely see them doing it because they're in a unique position to do it. The only other people who own something like it are AT&T, who bought Channel 55 from Qualcomm.
Okay.
And was that what Qualcomm was using to run that TV service they had for a while that they shut down?
Yes, it was running on Channel 55.
Ah, okay. That's gone now, I believe, isn't it?
Yeah, they shut it down and they sold the spectrum to AT&T, and even after all the money they spent, they still made money off the spectrum sale.
Well, that tells you the deal they got.
Is there any other work going to be going on with adding, with the, you were talking about the spectrum, people, the companies buying up the spectrum. Is there anything going to happen other than what you just mentioned about 55 or 56? Any other ones that are going to be sold? Because 51 through, like, I think it was Channel 5 through 51 is getting awful crowded. I live in Northeast Indiana, and there's a lot of, you can pick up just about anything. And from Michigan, Ohio, and I can even get over near Aurora, over there by Chicago, Illinois.
Yeah, the the Congress back in February of 2012 did authorize what they're calling incentive auctions. And basically what that means is that broadcasters who want to get out of business are offered a chance to basically sell their spectrum at auction. And then wireless companies buy it, and then from the profits of that venture, the broadcasters get paid a fund to move everybody else around, basically. And as some of you may know, I do work for the FCC, and I'm working on that project, actually. And so there's not a whole lot I can really say about it. You know, there are some stations that are interested in participating. The vast majority are not. You know, there's talk about taking as much as 120 megahertz, which would get you down to channel 31. I don't think there's going to be enough participation to get there, but who knows? You know, we're seeing lots of consolidation in the broadcast business right now, and a lot of that's occurring with, you know, broadcasters, not people buying the TV stations up for spectrum sales. So, yeah, I'm taking a wait and see kind of attitude toward it.
I got a question. I don't know if you know most of that TV stuff, but just is the radio stations doing that too? You know, like the FM radio, or do you know anything about that particular?
No, FM radio is actually expanding. They just announced the FCC just announced this week that there's going to be another low power FM window in October. Which will increase FM stations. They're currently processing all the translator applications from 2003. Yes, the year is 2013 now. It did take 10 years.
Yeah.
And so, you know, either they're going to, you know, they're going to either put new services on those, or they're going to simulcast AMs who are trying to get 24-hour, you know, 24-hour signals that don't get completely destroyed under electrical noise. You know, the FM service is actually growing, if you can believe that, given how crowded it is in some parts of the country.
That's still on the same spectrum, right? I mean, same frequency range. They're not going to expand the frequency range, are they?
Yeah, no. It's just they're packing more stations in, and a lot of that has to do with tuner improvements. You know, the four channel separation that you see if you've been to some of these big markets, you know, like New York. You know, in New York, it's basically every 800 kilohertz, 92.3, 93.1, 93.9. That dates to the day when FM receivers weren't very good. You would have splatter all the way over, basically, just from 93.1 all the way over to 93.7. And you really couldn't put anything there. You know, nowadays, you have, you know, these basically radios on a chip that do all this computer processing, and they're so much better. You know, these days you could probably pull out two FM signals that are 200 kilohertz apart with one of those radios. And so, you know, how much protection is needed basically amounts to how old of a radio do you want to assume the average person is using.
Right. Exactly.
Is the HD radio catching on? Because I know there's only like a very few stations in where I live. There's one local station that has it, and that's it. And other than probably Fort Wayne, but there's only one around here. So, and you were also mentioning about the going FM radio, simulcasting the AM radio on there. There is one radio station in Fort Wayne that already does that, and they changed their format so they can have their call sign was like WoWo Radio,
right?
And they used to be the like news and talk on AM, and then they cut back their frequency and they gave it to put it on 92.3 FM and simulcast it on that. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's one of the things that people are doing with translators these days. And that's one of the ways that the FM service is still growing. With regard to HD radio, from the broadcast side, as opposed to the consumer side, from the broadcast side, its growth has basically stopped because most of the big markets already have it basically across the board, and all the small markets, you know, they're not in a hurry to upgrade. They're just going to, you know, when the transmitter dies, they'll get a new one that has that ability in it.
Right.
you know. And as far as the consumer side, I feel like HD radio's visibility is really bad. A lot of people have heard the spots on the radio and have no idea what it is, which is
or think it has a monthly fee.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a fan of it from a technical standpoint. I don't think it was the best way to do digital radio, but I'm also not sure that there was a much better alternative that would have made through with all the stakeholders being happy. But that said, for what it is, you know, it's a lot of what it's being used for now is to feed these translators. So, you know, for example, here in D.C., where I live in Northern Virginia, in D.C., there is a 105.5 translator, and what it's translating, quote-unquote, is the HD2 of 88.5 FM, which is an all bluegrass music station. And I would guarantee you that approximately 99% of their listenership either comes from that 105.5 signal or from internet streaming. And basically none of it comes from the HD radio side.
Right. I kind of figured what was going on.
You know, the big problem from a technical standpoint with HD radio is that it bleeds so far into the adjacent channel. You know, DC, for those of you who know, who don't know, DC is a very cluttered radio market. Baltimore is 30 miles away. And,
oh, gosh, yeah.
You know, there are FM stations, for instance, there are FM stations in DC on 105.9 and 106.7. And in Baltimore, they have FM stations on 105.7, 106.5, 200 kilohertz apart at 30 miles. Now,
I guess the consumer radio, like you're saying?
Well, before 1964, there were no rules for FM. You basically said, I want to put a station here, and the FCC said yes.
Okay.
And that's how a lot of these short spacings got done in the first place. My great example of what bothers me about HD radio is this. In D.C. here, 105.9 does not run HD radio, but 106.7 does. When I take my radio and I tune it around, I can hear Baltimore's 105.7 just fine. But 106.5 is demolished under the digital signal of 106.7.
Right.
You know, which, you know, that some people would say, well, it's an out-of-market signal, you know, too bad.
Yeah.
You know, I argue that, you know, I personally like digital TV, but I don't like digital radio. And the difference is one is used while you're in motion and one is not. And when you're in motion, digital signal, you know, unless it's error-corrected to death like your cell phone is, just is not going to do as well. And you see this with HD radio. If you have one in your car, which I don't, but I've ridden in cars with people with one, when you start to get out into the fringe areas, it blends back to analog regularly. You know, it's just not as good.
Exactly.
And that's just sort of how it is. And, you know, I feel like you should, you know, the correct solution would be to just put more analog transmitters out there. You know, even expand the FM band, if that, you know, were politically possible. And, you know, I feel like that's the better way to expand the service, not going digital. But, of course, that's just my opinion that, you know, that's other people have different opinions.
Oh, yeah.
They did mention it when I applied for the radio station job about a year or two ago. They were telling me about our local radio station here. They were talking about the digital radio, and they went. You know, I thought it was fascinating. The guy telling me about the job, he says, I had to apply by FCC rules, and when you apply here, I have to tell you how certain things operate. And he told me about the HD radio, and he says, you have to be almost right next to the radio station to get it because it's that short of a signal. And he says, it's nice, but you can't get that far away from the power, and you lose it.
Well, I won't say it's that bad. It's not that you have to be right next to it. It's that you can't be moving. No, I mean, when I'll say this, the new HD radios are miles better than the old ones. I have one of the old Radio Shack ones. I think I got it in like 06 or something. Maybe it was newer than that. But it was one of the first ones that was consumer available. And it was awful. I had to hook it to my roof antenna to get anything. I bought the Sony desktop unit, the S3 HD, which some of you have probably seen. And when I got to my parents' house, same place I needed the roof antenna, it's 80 miles from the local HD radio stations, I took a simple FM dipole, crumpled up on the floor, plugged it into it, and decoded the NPR station from 80 miles away. Now granted, if I, walked around it or I picked it up and moved it, it dropped out and went away, but
oh, yeah.
It was...
Oh, yeah. Big difference on the way it operates, the way it works. And it's,
yeah.
And people, again, getting back to the normal consumer, they don't understand that, and
right.
I explain it, but they don't care, they just want to listen to their music or their talk shows or whatever. They want it to work,
Right.
That's the big thing.
And that's why I feel more analog FM is the way to go. I mean, analog FM, people don't really give it enough credit. You can hear it well beyond where people, quote-unquote, listenable.
Oh, yeah.
At this point, they've started putting them so close together that the stations are more interference-limited than noise-limited. You start to hear another FM station long before it fades out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. I've been, being ham radio for so many years, 20-some years, and being very active in ham radio and on HF and VHF and UHF and, every day, on the radio and experiment with stuff and things, in my book, I put mobile and I even tried HF mobile and, of course, VHF and whatever, different modes and AM and FM and even some of the newer, tighter, filters and stuff, whatever. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Makes a big difference,
And, I won't argue that there aren't digital modes that are significantly superior to analog. However,
right.
those are called Morse code, and most people don't know that language.
Exactly. That's the best one out there. I mean, it is. People are like, what, really? How is that the best one out there?
It's basically, that's the great thing about digital. It's either there or it isn't. It's a zero or a one, which is why you can get away with so much less signal. But
yeah.
You have to, you have to have enough there. You can have a zero and a one, and you can pick that out really easily. It's when you're trying to, put 5 million zeros and ones per
yeah.
second that you start to run into a problem.
Exactly. That's the problem. Hey, Tripp, let me ask you this.
Sure.
Switching gears just a little bit, but on rabbit ears, who's Mike?
Oh, Mike is a friend of mine. He lives in Los Angeles, and he maintains the spreadsheets, or maintained. He's gotten very busy. When you look at the listings, there's a section called DTV spreadsheets. That's actually his thing. He maintained those for a number of years. But I think he's gotten to where he's really busy on a regular basis, and he's not been able to keep them up and running anymore.
Okay.
But he and I are still in touch. I mean, emails go back and forth at least once per week.
I bet he emailed you today, didn't he? Or text you?
Yeah, you emailed him. He forwarded me the email, and then I was on the phone with my parents. So then I had to, I emailed him back, and then he texted me, and
yeah.
he didn't see my email. And then right as I got off the phone with my parents, he called and says, yeah, this guy from the radio show is trying to get in touch with you.
That's Stalker Michael there. Jeez, Michael.
I just wanted to publicly I don't, he's probably not listening, but I appreciate his help and everything. Because I hadn't heard from you in a couple of days, and I was like, oh, crap, the other show's coming up, and I ain't heard from Tripp. And I've been, I said, and I went to Rabbit Ears, and And I, you know, the place you sent for info, somewhere there was something about Mike, you know. And then I thought, well, I'll send a webmaster at Rabbit Ears. And I thought, and then Mike came right back to me. I said, hey, can you hold a trip? Yeah, I can get right a hold of him. I said, okay, cool.
Yeah.
I just wanted to, you know, publicly say, hey, you know, to him, you know, hats off to getting your attention and getting a hold of you, you know, because we were, you know, down to less than 30 minutes before the show started, you know. And
I understand. And let me take a moment while we're on the subject of people who are related to Rabbit Ears. I hate taking credit for all of Rabbit Ears because there are a lot of people, you know, who put in a lot of time and effort to make it possible. You know, I could not do this single-handedly. You know, whether it's the literally hundreds of people who send me updates on a regular basis about TV stations across the country, or it's people like David who posts the Arizona station update on the front page, you know, to the programmers, Bruce Myers, who wrote the original code, Bob Nelson, who wrote the code that generates the coverage maps, that automates the coverage maps. The software itself is open source. It was written by a ham radio operator. You know, and there's other people, too. You know, it's very much, you know, I'm the central manager. I keep it going. I do the daily updates, et cetera. But there are a lot of people out there without whom the website would not exist, and or certainly not in the form that it exists today. Without Bruce Myers, the site would not exist at all.
Now, Bruce Myers, he's with Lukens, right?
No, Bruce Myers was an independent. He's an independent programmer. Some background on Rabbit Ears, I guess. I started tracking the digital transition, and I used, you know, I had written this website, but I didn't know anything about programming.
Yeah, because I remember that name from a while back. So maybe I was wrong, so go ahead.
Yeah, he basically, you know, I was using the old Rabbit Ears code that I had written that was very incomplete, and it wasn't automated in any way, so I would have had to hand manage it, which would have been crazy. And so, you know, I was using that as a place to host my my page about the digital transition, and people started trying to email me updates to the data on the site that I had not filled out. And so I posted a big notice in red print at the top of the page, and I said, the rest of the site doesn't work. Don't send me any emails about it unless you're going to help me build a website. And about 2 weeks later, I got an email from Mr. Myers and said, I built something for you. I want to show it to you. And that was March 14th, 2008. On April 14th, 2008, I took it live. And it's been up and running ever since.
Wow.
And even to this day, you know, Bruce is still, you know, if I have a problem, I can email Bruce and he'll, you know, within a day, he'll get back to me with, you know, whatever it is I need help with. You know, and in return, when I come across somebody who is looking for, you know, a freelance programmer to do a project for them, you know, I say, well, my website, the framework for my website was built by this guy. You should talk to him. And, you know, that's what I try to do to pay him back, to thank him for, you know, basically making this possible.
And everybody's got to remember, you was, what, fresh and young and 19 years old or something back then, wasn't you?
Yeah, it was my first year of college.
Yeah. If everybody was like you, you know, we'd have a better society of things than everybody going off and just doing this out there or doing their dope or whatever. And if everybody tried to actually make something of themselves, you know, it'd be a whole different society. I'll tell you that. I'm not trying to, you know, make you feel bad or feel like I'm on the spot, but I'm just saying, you know, you've done a lot, you know, you're 24 years old, you know. I'm 38.
Well, one of the advantages that I always felt like I had is that I always knew what I wanted to do. You know, I've personally been interested in broadcasting since as long as I can remember. You know, one of my earliest memories is looking at the newspaper when my family lived in New Jersey and seeing WLIW-21 as a TV channel. And I remember, you know, that's not on our TV. I went over and turned the TV on, pushed in 2-1 on the remote, and nothing came up.
Yeah.
And, you know, ever since then, TV has fascinated me,
yeah.
You know, and so, you know, I've always known that I want to do broadcast, and a lot of people, you know, even people who have graduated from college don't know what they want to do, you know, and so that's an advantage that I have that a lot of people don't have, And so, you know, people sometimes ask me for advice, and I say, you know, find something that you like and be the best at it. And, or, you know, try to be the best at it. And, you know, the rest sort of fixes itself, I think.
Wow. I did kind of, am I there? Yeah, I'm there.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Yeah, I got the feedback here. I can see it on the, but, you know, I did the same thing. I had my first ham ticket at 18 years old. I was still in high school, getting ready to graduate. And back then it was like a success story, but that's kind of faded away now. But it was back when you had, you know, all the code, you had to take all that crap. But anyway, I took, and they only give tests around here 6 months. And it's a small area, I mean, every 6 months. So I would take... So I went and studied for the novice. I studied technician written, and I studied the code. You know,
right.
And, well, they wouldn't still like 3 or 4 months for a test, though, and called the guy and said, no test, we can't give a test, we get so many people or whatever. And I'm like, okay. So I went and got a general book and started studying a general book. Then I started, you know, I kept working on my code with code tapes. You know, if anybody remembers cassette tapes, yeah. But anyway, when I went and took my test, I almost walked out of general. So I did. I passed I think I made 100 on the novice, 100 on the technician, and 100 on the general written.
Excellent.
You know, I think I missed one question on general written, but and I flew through the 5-minute code, but 13-minute code, I missed one too many questions because it all, they wouldn't fill in the blank. It was, you know, written, you had to handwrite everything up.
Right.
And there was no multiple choice, all that. But then the next time I went, I studied, got my code built up the next 6 months, and studied advanced and extra, and then I walked out in extra. And everybody used to say, oh, you're the guy that went from zero to extra in less than a year. And I was like, well, you know, because nowadays, you know, they give a test every 2 weeks or every month, and back then, you know, I had a whole year to study for it, and I was determined to get it, you know. And, of course, I was 18, 19, you know. That's a whole different story, a whole different time to talk about that.
Yeah, well, my philosophy on things, you know, when it comes to my job and my website and everything, my father always said, and I think the quote came from his grandfather, you know, if you're going to do something, be the best at it. And, you know, that's what I've tried to do, you know, and I'm a broadcast person. I've tried to be the best broadcast person.
Yeah.
Am I? No, but I try really hard.
Yeah. And, you know, somebody told me I was raised, you know, to not to brag or whatever and stuff, and somebody said, no. When I was about your age, I think, 24, 25, and they said, no, it's okay to brag about some things. Just don't overly brag about it. Let people know what you can do. Don't, you know, because I always, you know, was quiet and shy and didn't say anything, and people says, well, you can do that. You can program in this. You can do that. You can do ham radio this. You can do electronics, you know, because I got an electronics degree and a computer degree, but anyway.
Right.
You can do this and do that. And I was like, yeah. Well, tell people about it. And I was like, well, you know, I don't want to brag. And, well, you ain't bragging. Get there and tell them what you can do. And you know, same thing, you know, be what you know, best you can be. And there's going to be naysayers. There's going to be people that's going to come along and say, oh, you know, blah, 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 especially older people. But, you know, I found out a lot of times that people is twice my age that want it and want to be, but they never made it, you know, it was lazy or whatever, or just, I don't know. And they would try to hinder me or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And other people say, no, don't let them people bother you. Just get out there and do it. Because I had my own repeater up and running when I was 1920. I had a full-blown repeater running and people using the repeater system on 2 meters. Then I had a 440, and there was people wouldn't even talk on it because I was too young to know how to operate a repeater, know how to even put it together.
Right.
You know, what? You know. So, that's the way it is, you know.
Hey, well, Tripp. Hey, Michael.
I think you're going to say the same thing we're getting ready to say. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, appreciate you being on, Tripp. We've gone past the 1 hour, so I think we're going to shut her down. And
all right. Well, thank you for having me. If I can get one last comment in, about my live band scan maps. If anyone has an interest in participating and wants to try and get a hold of the HD Home Run sooner for that, send me an email. I'm trying to put together a bulk order to try and get basically a really good price on them. So the more people I can get, the better off that'll be. If you're interested, you can reach me. The best way, I guess, to reach me is to go to rabbitears.info. Under the help and info drop-down, there's a link that says contact, and my email address is right there.
Can you give a price of some sort, or do you want to just keep that off?
It's basically, I'm trying to get it under $50.
Okay. Really?
Yes.
Wow.
That's pretty cheap. I wonder if that would require like 5 or 10,000 purchases, or just a few hundred.
Well, they're not new, and they're refurbished units, but almost every one that I've purchased has been a refurbished unit, and I've only ever had one out of the 8 or so that I have had it in my possession. I've only had one that actually had a problem.
Yeah, is that the original model, or which model is it?
This would be the current model, the HD Home Run 3.
Oh, really? Okay.
Wow.
It's a small unit. It's very small.
Yes.
It would fit in the palm of your hand, or that's the one I have. I think it's the 3. It has 2 tuners in it?
It's the 2 tuner with the single input, and it's all black.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a big difference from when they originally came out.
Mm-hmm. So I'll definitely let you. I know we've run over the hour, so I will thank you again for having me, and I look forward to being on the show again sometime in the future.
Thanks, sir.
I'll let you know.
We'll make sure he doesn't stalk you this time, though.
Well, I mean, hopefully,
I had to stalk him. He forgot. I went out stalking. I was kind of chasing him down. I didn't have his phone number.
Hopefully next time I won't be moving the week of the show. I won't be moving my girlfriend the week of the show, and I'll be a little more available.
Well, that wasn't planned, though. So you know how that goes. All right, Trip. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well,
excuse me, sir. The show's over.
Thank you.
Excuse me, sir. The show's over.
Thank you, and good night.
Thanks to all that tuned in tonight. Join those crazy satellite guys, Michael and Dave, next week for another exciting episode of Satellite Nation.
Bye-bye.
I want to see motion, movement. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay?
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.